This is Shark Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on, because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark. Live.
Weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. Don't miss our live show on Thursdays, but for now, you've got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Hey, welcome to Grimdark Live, your weekly webcast for all things Warhammer. I'm your host, Patrick, and as always, my co-host, Steve. Steve, what do you hear? What do you say, bud?
Boy, we're going to be talking about a lot of things Warhammer, especially what's coming up in the new year.
You are not kidding, man. We got a lot of stuff to go through. So you're actually going to be kind of dipping in a little bit on some wish lists for the new year as far as some armies that you want to be maybe get out there and see to play next year, huh?
Oh, definitely. And we have quite a few of them coming.
Yeah, that's going to be a good topic, man. And also, we're going to be still kind of kicking the can down the road with Slaves of Darkness. We're going to be looking over some of the champions in specific and some of their units. And I'm going to talk about one unit in particular that I think is getting overlooked and maybe try to, you know, tickle somebody's fancy out there that is a Chaos player. Because as I said, I'm excited for this army in the same way that I was excited for Nurgle, because I'm not a Nurgle player any more than I am a Slaves of Darkness player, but the idea that that these guys will be on the table and potentially we're going to be competing against them here someday soon really motivates me, man. I'm looking forward to that. They're a great opponent. And so that's one part of the news. Also, we've got some army motivations. I'm going to leave it at that. You know, pretty much we're going to talk a little bit about what motivates you to play a certain army and why. You know, Steve, you and I have always kind of talked about that a little bit offline.
Yeah, I think it's what drives most Warhammer players to play the armies that they play.
Right. I agree. Yeah, I do. And you know, so that's what we've got. And as always, we've got the question of the day and the closing thought towards the end of the show.
Hey, you Grimdark goons. Thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast. If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grimdark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
So let's get rolling into this, man. Let's get into the news right off the bat. We're gonna continue on with our discussion on the Slaves to Darkness. I know that last week we had a pretty healthy conversation as far as the drop and what to expect there, and so I think that was always something that needed to happen. I know that it's an army that's got a lot of excitement out there in the community. I mean, what have you been hearing? Even though we're a week past from last week's show, you've been hearing a lot about the upcoming Slaves of Darkness, anticipating that release. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that I've actually went into the GW website and I looked at some of the war scrolls, and one of the things that I was really upset about was the fact that Chaos Warriors did not have Ren for their halberds. As a matter of fact, they hit on a 3 and wound on a 4 with their halberds. But then I looked a little bit deeper into their war scroll and noticed that their halberdiers can have the Chaos Rune Shield.
Right, exactly.
And that makes a big difference, because that's a 5+ versus mortal wounds. And it would stand to reason that, you know, we were complaining last week about how Skaven and how Storm Vermin and Phoenix Guard have a rend on their halberd, but that the Chaos Warriors don't.
Right. Yeah. We were talking about that.
And I think it could be justified by saying that if you're swinging a halberd with two hands, you're going to be a lot more, you're going to put a lot more oomph into your attack than you would if you're just using it as a thrust, you know, thrust and stab weapon, almost like a spear.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, and, you know, I guess, though, you know, with these kind of, we kind of talked about this, though. We kind of expected that when Slaves of Darkness came out, that we were kind of concerned that they weren't just polishing the tin, as we kept saying last week. So.
I think they did. I mean, honestly, I think they did. I think they polished the tin, but I do think this is now a more viable army for a Chaos player.
Oh my gosh. From where they came from AOS 1 to AOS 1.5, if that's what, 1.5, that's what you want to call it. But absolutely, I totally agree. I think the best part of this army, ironically enough, is not going to be the Arcan part, although we're going to get to Arcan himself here in 1 second. It's going to be the Nurgle part, and we're not really going to touch on that one this show here, but I think we're going to let the book get in everyone's sweaty palms here. But you know what, folks? I forgot all about this in our excitement to get the show going here. In case anyone hasn't noticed, it's Wednesday. So Grimdark Live is typically on Thursdays, and today we... we decided to have the show because 'tis the season. You know, I've got in my day job, I've got holiday parties and stuff like that I've got to get done, and that's all tomorrow. And Steve, you know, 'tis the season.
Same here. So
here it is. You're getting Grimdark Live early tonight, man. So you can kind of enjoy it. So if we threw anyone a curveball, we're really sorry about that. I am. Steve's
you just
not
get us one day early.
Yeah, Steve's not very sorry. He was actually laughing about how the confusion and mayhem was going to cause all of our listeners. He was giggling about it, and very maniacally, by the way, too. I'd have to point out.
You didn't hear me deny it, did you?
No, exactly. So let's get into the news here. So Slaves of Darkness. I want to kind of walk down the road here a little bit with this deliverable. Again,
let's go.
This deliverable this week, I think, is again kind of kingfish. There's not really a lot that I would see in the news that would trump this. So here we go. Slaves of Darkness. I want to talk about their champions and their units here a little bit. Now, folks, if you've pre-ordered this past weekend, then this weekend you'll be getting your sweaty palms on the new battle tome for Slaves of Darkness, and even the start collecting box if you went that far for the new Slaves
of
Darkness.
Which is the best
deal? Oh yeah, I totally agree, and I love the sculpts. I really, really do.
Yeah, they're phenomenal.
And as we spoke about last week, and I'll briefly readdress, here is my captivation for the army as an opponent. I'm not a Slaves of Darkness player, but it is truly one of the most iconic armies to face in the game. And I guess, you know,
oh, it is the iconic army to face in the game, especially if we're bringing any semblance of the old world into this new world. Archaon is behind everything.
Oh yeah.
So it is of the greatest importance that we do this army justice tonight.
Oh yeah, and you know, and again, with that said, we could have a 12-hour show. I'm sure that would be miserable to some people out there, but we're not going to be able to do that tonight. So I thought what we would do is, you know, in understanding there are so many units and champions to go through in this army that myself and Steve we're not going to be doing that today on Grimdark Live, but we will be discussing a few here briefly. You know, the Slaves of Darkness fight for any of the Chaos Gods or the gods as a pantheon, and can be built in a variety of ways with plenty of opportunity for synergy between heroes and units. And I think that's one of the strong points about this army, like a la Gloomspite Gitz, where you have that tight synergy. But you can have that synergy. And finally, there's even more so in regards to that kind of synergy with what's about to finally drop this Saturday. But right now, I thought we'd focus on four Slaves of Darkness units today on Grimdark Live. And obviously we got to start with Arcan. You know, he's the big baddie. You know, for me, the coolest thing about the Slaves of Darkness army is the host of powerful champions really at anyone's disposal. There's so many great and iconic models available that each offering different tactical options to your force. I mean, is that a good way to put that, Steve, or would you have put that probably better?
Yes, I think it's an excellent way to put it.
Yeah, and so here we got Arcan. He's the exalted Grand Marshal of the Apocalypse. I mean, this bastard is going to be riding the biggest float on the parade. Arcan.
He's riding Ghidra.
Yeah, exactly. Which just cracks me up because that thing used to be like a My Little Pony with a bad attitude. And now all of a sudden it's like this three-headed dragon thing. It's just bananas. I mean, when you talk about Arcan, you're talking about a guy that killed a world. So his credentials are really beyond reproach. I mean, this guy put down the old world, and that was that. So,
well, he did exactly, yes, he did exactly what he set out to do.
Yeah.
There is no denying that this guy is the true champion of chaos. I mean, he destroyed an entire world, and now he's out to destroy a second one.
Right. And you know what's funny is I have Charlie Sheen running through my mind going, winning, you know, because really, if you think about it, Arcan is just a winner. I mean, this guy just wins, period. And I love what they've done to upgrade his war scroll. I think he's going to be feared again on the table. I mean, in the Battle Tome, Slaves of Darkness, Arcan really has a shiny new war scroll that's been finally fixed, you know, complete with Rend -2 on the Slayer of Kings. Finally. I mean, how many times we talk about that stupid butter knife of his?
I actually disagree with the Rend of 2. I think it should be Rend of 3. Slayer of Kings is the most powerful sword ever created.
Okay.
It is of equal power to Galmraz, which is Sigmar's hammer.
And what is, do you know what that, well, I mean, there is no Galmraz. I guess the, there's only,
but
the,
my point is that this sword is like the Excalibur of evil. And it should be a Rend of 3, and I'm happy it's a damage 3, because that right. is exactly, it is exactly the way it should be, save for just, and this is just my opinion, mm-hmm. it should be Rend 3, but I will take Rend 2.
Well, especially if you're what, at a 2+ to hit?
But that to me is natural. In other words, that sword should be 2x2, in my opinion.
Okay. All right.
This guy should be ultra powerful. He brought down a world, as we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Having only 4 attacks kind of irritates me as well.
Well,
this,
you know,
guy should be worse. This guy should be a terror on the battlefield.
You know what's funny is you know, that's not the avenue. I mean, I kind of figured that you were going to be a little bit critical still of the Slayer of Kings,
no.
But I thought for sure you were going to talk about the range. I think the 1-inch range on this massive sword.
The range doesn't bother me because, I mean, that's fine. The range of 1 is fine. He's not going to be fighting behind anyone. That's for bloody sure. He's going to be up there in it. This is a guy who's going to be out on his own, fighting alone.
Well, I mean, and I'm not sure that would be...
He doesn't need his troops.
Well, I'm not sure that that's a very good recipe for success either. You put him up against your trolls, even with 20 wounds.
Well, the thing is, though, he wouldn't go against the trolls. He would wait until the warriors brought the trolls down to maybe half, and then he'd come flying in.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
He'd go target my general or go target my wizards. Now, you may say, well, that's a waste of time. No, it's not. Those are the characters that keep the troll army from running.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. And, you know, we're going to kind of discuss about, you know, that in a little bit here. We're going to touch on the importance of characters. But I guess with all that said, I mean, it's kind of hard to kind of sounds like Steve and I were kind of mother effing old Arcan here a little bit. But I mean, without peril, I think he definitely is still a warlord without equal. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Especially that rule. I mean, if you take the warlord without equal rule, now it gives you an extra command point at the start of the hero phase while he's on the battlefield. We touched on that last week. So folks, if you want to kind of have more of an in-depth comment on that, you know, go ahead and listen to our last week's show. But in a game where command point generation to activate your cool abilities is key in this game, you can never have too many. Let's put it that way. So I think to start off recognizing what this army is going to be by finally having a centerpiece model, because I think they tried with Marathi, with Daughters of Cain, and I don't think it quite worked. You didn't see
no.
a lot of people playing Marathi.
No, I don't see anyone playing her, as a matter of fact. As
yeah.
a matter, I never used her, and my army went undefeated for 26 games.
Right.
So,
yeah, and that's true.
I'm not being braggadocious. I'm just saying I didn't need Marathi.
Brag away,
man.
That was a brag away. That was a hell of an army. But, you know, I think of all the other, you know, I think the only centerpiece that is ever really, you know, the Celestine Prime, you don't see him a lot, actually rarely at all. You know, another one, you don't see a Lauriel. I mean, I think I've seen a Lauriel maybe a handful of times.
Maybe 2 times I think I've seen around the table.
But if it's not Nagash, who the heck is it? I mean, that's.
I agree.
That's, But I think this thing, and I will say this, out of all the models we just talked about, you know, Marathi, you know, Nagash, you know, the Celestine Prime, Ilariel, I think Archaon is definitely the most badass of them all.
Well,
I mean,
as far as how they looked,
the cosmetic, the exquisiteness of that miniature.
This is how bad it was at one time with Archaon.
Okay.
It was so bad that when people would put him on the table on that off chance, other people would be like, what the hell's that? Like, they didn't even know who he was because so few people played him. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, or they, you know, what's funny is there were a couple of times our buddy Randy, you know, one of the nicest guy in tabletop wargaming, who's usually on the show tonight, but he's not able to be here. He was the first guy that I ever saw that consistently played Archaon.
Yep.
But even more to that, Archaon was so bad and such an afterthought that people would go after the rest of the army and just leave Archaon kind of floating around out
there. Yes, they would.
And then once they cleaned up whatever was around or in front of him, then they went after Archaon.
They didn't even care if they killed Archaon, because if I killed the army around you, you don't have anything left to hold objectives.
Well, that's it. I mean, I would say that this game, if you were to look at this game, and again, we're kind of taking a left turn at Albuquerque here on the Slaves of Darkness piece here. But if you were to take this game and put a weighted, you know, piece to it, you know, almost like a scale, I think the left side of the scale, you would see command points. And then the other side of the, you would see objectives. I mean, that's the secret sauce of your wins and losses in this game. You know, can you hold an objective and do you have enough command points to be able to do so and some of your other cool little tricks? But, you know, I definitely will say that I think Archaon is going to make everything that we're saying right here a distant memory. Because I think he, in compilation with what he's going to be able to do with this new army, even Dorgar, his attacks, his ability to, you know, his other abilities, like, you know, the army of Morcar, the crown of domination, you know, the eye of, is it Sheerian? I can never pronounce that.
Yeah.
But, you know, this guy is, even for 800 points, I think you're going to see him. My prediction is you're going to see him on the table as much as you've always seen Nagash.
Yeah, he will be almost in every Slaves to Darkness army.
Yeah, I think that either the Slaves to Darkness army, in my mind, the build is either going to be the Ever Chosen build, or it's going to be that Nurgle build, and the name of it kind of halts me here for a second. But regardless, I think those are going to be the two main builds that you're going to see out of that Slaves to Darkness book. But, you know, moving on with characters, can we move on, or do you have anything else you want to say?
Sure. No. I think I'm very happy with Archaon as I look at his war scroll again. I think he is exactly what Slaves to Darkness players have been waiting for, and I am so happy that they fixed Slayer of Kings.
Well,
I just wish they would have made the Rend a little bit more nasty, because it is the Excalibur of Evil.
Well, I forgot about one part about Slayers of Kings, and whether people know this or not, you know, I'm gonna
he kills you outright
on a six. So if he walked up to Nagash, you roll a six. Nagash is dead.
Correct. Good. That's what it should be.
And well, I think that in a way kind of removes the angst of having a negative two rend.
Oh, I can live with the negative. I can live with the negative two rend with that ability.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I just wish it would have been a little bit nastier to kind of fit the fluff of the sword, but oh no, I'm very happy with Slayer of Kings.
Yeah, no, he's a nasty bit of business. But the next character that I want to talk about is the call him he's the milkman, he's the mailman, he's the blue collar sorcerer lord of the whole army, and that's the Chaos Sorcerer Lord. And if you think about it, what Slaves of Darkness army wouldn't be complete without really an awesome sorcerer in it like this guy? I mean, this guy's a classic, and you know,
great model too.
Yeah, it is a great model. I mean, you know, back in AOS 1, I used him a lot for his ocular vision spell and things like that when he could buff my minotaurs, and it was a wonderful thing. I mean, I still have a painted miniature of him. I've focused on this guy in particular due to his awesome war scroll ability, which again, I just mentioned it, and I'm going to say it here again, is ocular vision. And what this is this allows you to pick a chaos unit and re-roll armor saves. He also has access to a pretty darn good War Scroll spell in Demonic Power, which allows a nearby unit to reroll hit and wound rolls. Now,
and it only casts on a six, which is phenomenal.
That's true. But let's put this into perspective here. You were to take that spell, cast on a six, so it's not one of these Las Vegas parlor tricks, you know, casting on a seven and all that kind of good stuff. But let's say you cast this spell. Right, okay. You cast Demonic Power on, say, Minotaur with great weapons.
Well, it says it has to be cast on mortal slaves to darkness.
Yeah, that's right. It was changed. That's right. Right. I keep, you know, it used to
Which is the reason why they did that. Yeah. So people wouldn't be doing what you just said.
Well, because I did that.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you have Minotaurs with great weapons, you know, that even at fours by threes, negative two damage three, rerolling was a beautiful thing.
This is a spell that I would definitely use if I were standing behind a unit of Chosen. Because they're going to be able to reroll their hits and wounds, and they do have rend on their weapons.
And we're going to get into that. That's our next, you know, speaking of the characters, our third that we're going to get into is the Chosen. And I'll tell you why. Can we jump right to this? Or you know, I guess we're kind of sweeping the cast over to the side here for a second. But we are going to get to the Chosen next, okay? We got to do that one.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's just take one little last look at him. I do think Ocular Vision is great.
Right.
I love the ability. I love this ability to reroll hits and wounds on just a six for casting.
Right.
He's not impressive, you know, as far as melee, but he's not supposed to be.
No.
He's a great chaos. He's a great wizard. He's a 4+ save, 7 bravery, 5 wounds. Perfect.
Yeah. Right.
Love him.
Yeah, and you know, not every mage is going to be a butcher or, you know, the ogre thaumaturge, you know, in close combat. No, that's not his role. I mean, you know, and the thing is, what I see people doing with this guy, they're probably going to take two of them, stick them behind a unit of Chaos Warriors or Chaos Chosen, and then that's it. Bob's your uncle, and, you know, it's off to Pound Town from there, I think. You know, that's
what I would do.
2 cents in a tin can on that guy. But I love the Chaos Sorcerer Lord because he's just a classic, and I've said that before. I really, when I look at my opponent across the table and I'm about to play that, if I see him on the table, I get kind of happy. It's like seeing an old friend. It's like really, really good to see him again. But the Chosen. Now, here's a unit I really wanted to talk about. And the Chosen in the new Battle Tome are the heavy hitters, being fast for foot troops. I think they move a six while still hitting like a ton of bricks. And, you know, we've heard us say, you know, time and time again, you know, Steve and I really love those type of units that, as we say, hit harder than winter on welfare. The Chosen definitely do that. They've got 3 attacks with Ren -1, inflicting a mortal wound on a 6 to hit in addition to other normal damage, meaning, you know, these guys really pack a punch, right? I mean, that's...
They would be the center of my army if I were playing Slaves to Darkness.
And
I would definitely have a unit of Chosen.
And you know what? I have to say I agree with you, but I'd say you and I right now, and maybe after the show, maybe other folks may agree with us or not, but I think these guys have always kind of sat behind and were overlooked by the Chaos Warriors. And you know, what I'd like to do is express a little worth to these little baddies right now, because I think the Chosen do kind of get the old Shondoler when it comes to list building.
Well, can I make a point about that?
Sure. Do it.
I think the problem with that in the past was Chosen were in boxes of 5 and they were outrageously priced. So you rarely saw people using Chosen, big chunks of Chosen in any army, because I think back in the day around 6th edition, I think when they came out, they were an incredibly ridiculously expensive unit. It was a $300 unit, basically, if you wanted a full.
Well, yeah. So I get it. There were some barriers there, you know, in all reality to get somebody to, you know, to get these things. But I did some math today, you know, kind of thinking about this army, kind of thinking about what I want to talk about on tonight's show. And I did some math here on the Chosen. So somebody out there, you know, please correct me if my math is wrong, but Chaos Chosen, I'm just going to say this, so let me just spit this out. Are to me, they're monstrous in terms of damage efficiency. So here it is, Steve, and you're a math guy too. So roll with me on this one.
Go.
A squad of five puts out 16 attacks for roughly around 7.4, 7.5 damage against a 4-plus save for 140 points. Or, say, 18.9 points per one damage against 6-plus that goes down to 14.3 points per one damage. For reference, Chaos Warriors with two hand weapons are 30.7 points per one damage against 4-plus and 18.4 against 6-plus. But what puts, to me, the Chaos chosen over the top is the rend that they're going to get on that one weapon and the mortal wounds.
Correct.
And I think that, like you just said, and I totally agree with you, if I was playing a Slaves of Darkness army, I mean, this thing would look like a proctologist wet dream. It'd be wall to wall with these assholes all over the place, you know, on the tabletop for sure.
However, I would not put them in groups above 10 because they only have a 1-inch range.
That's true.
And
the
probability of you getting all 10 of them into combat is slim, actually. You're probably going to get about 8 into combat unless, you know, you can do some creative moving. But I wouldn't go above, I would not go above 10 with these guys.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, I never really understood why, say, you know, you look at the size of these axes, and it reminds me a lot of the Bestigors in the Beast of Chaos army. You know, this 1-inch, you know, these guys have 3s by 3s, negative 1, damage 1, just like the Bestigors do. But they're all 1-inch. Like, you got this big battle axe, man. I just don't understand how that could be 1-inch.
It's a gigantic pole arm, actually. So I don't understand why these are a 1-inch range. I can tell. Well, I can tell you. I think they understand that if these were a 2-inch range war scroll, I guarantee you would see nothing but gigantic blocks of these things. Like the brutes can get away with it because the brutes have a 2-inch range on their spears. And these guys here have almost an identical war scroll, at least in terms of the stat line, to the brutes.
True.
They're 3s by 3s, rend of 1, damage 1. So it does kind of myth me that these guys are only wounds of 2. These guys should be 3 wounds. They should not have the same amount of wounds as a basic Chaos Warrior.
True. Yeah.
I have a little bit of a problem with that. I think they should be 3 wounds.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I would, you know what?
I mean, you have to remember, dude, these are chosen. These are the guys that have exalted themselves among the other barbarians in the tribe.
Okay, I got a question for you then.
These are the top dogs.
Would you take 2 wounds with a 4-plus save, or would you take 3 wounds with their current 6-plus save?
6-plus that again? They didn't have a 6-plus save. They've always had.
Oh, I'm going off memory. I'm thinking of the Marauder Horseman. Sorry about that. No, okay. Chaos Chosen. Yeah, okay. They do have a 4-plus save. So you think they should have 3 wounds? Okay.
I do, because what distinguishes them from a Chaos Warrior? And please don't tell me, they cause a mortal wound on a 6. No, come on now.
Right.
These guys are the exalted of the tribe. They usually form the bodyguard of any foot soldier general. So any guy on foot, any character on foot, like warrior, like a warlord on foot, they're going to have these guys around them. These are their personal bodyguard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're telling me these guys only have the same amount of wounds as a basic Chaos Warrior? No, that doesn't work for me. And you're telling me that these guys aren't going to have the same amount of wounds as a brute?
Well, yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. I guess it's the depths of what they mean by chosen, you know?
Yes, they're the chosen, exactly. They should have 3 wounds, but whatever, I digress.
But I will say this, you know, one of the coolest abilities, I think, is the Slaughter Leader's Rule. You know, this allows Chaos units within 12 inches to reroll wound rolls for chosen that have killed anything in that phase. I mean, what I like about that, and I want to go back to why I like that, is because, again, I'm going to go back to my beloved Beastie Boys here. You know, with my Beast of Chaos army, one of the models in the War Scrolls that I like until a certain point, probably one of the most, is the Beast Lord. But his command ability, you know, if he's the general of your army, you need to actually have him out in front of your troops killing something before you could activate his command ability. So it kind of ruins, you know, taking a Beast Lord in your army. But what I like about these guys is they actually fit the philosophy of what they're going to be doing. These guys are going to be literally face to face with the enemy, hacking and fighting and chopping away.
They're going to be right in the thick of things.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's going to be, you know, they're anywhere that it's going to be assholes and elbows is where these guys are going to be.
Yep.
And so for them,
they should be.
Yeah. For them to have these slaughter leader rule, I think is perfect. And what I like about that is units within 12 inches, to reroll. Now, I don't think that that's wholly within, but,
yes, it does say, it says wholly within. I'm okay. Looking right at it. It says, mortal slaves to darkness units wholly within 12 inches of any friendly unit with this ability until your next hero phase.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's still a pretty tanky ability. I mean, just for these guys to go up and do what they're going to do anyways.
Yeah. But once again, it's the way it should be. These are the chosen.
Yeah, and I guess we're going to have to kind of go on here and see what the new book has and see the, you know, to see what that chosen really means. You know, maybe they're just chosen to, you know, be out front
chosen
and
to
take,
die,
take the
as
hits.
We used to joke.
Yeah, yeah. All right, fourth one. We got this next unit coming up in the fourth and last unit in our little quick pick look up here for the Slaves of Darkness, and that's the Chaos Knights, man. The stud muffins of any Chaos Slaves of Darkness
Don't
army.
Ever say that again.
Which one? Stud muffins?
Stud muffins.
Personally,
every Chaos player out there right now just cringe.
I did, and I did that purposely because as a Nobbler player, I want them to do that.
Who?
Don't start with me, Jagoff. Come on. Personally, I don't think there's anything more iconic than a Chaos Knight. Really. These guys ride fast, they hit hard, and are incredibly resilient with 3 wounds each and a great save characteristic. I mean, they're going to be the key. And I'm going to say this again. They're going to be the key in any Slaves of Darkness force.
Yeah, they're great. Love their stats.
Yeah, I'd recommend, arming them with lances. I know that we had we have high class white trash. By the way, whoever that is, man, I love that that's your name on YouTube. That is freaking awesome. So we have a listener that chimed in. He says they should have 2-inch range. I'm just happy that the Chaos Knights finally have 2-inch reach with their lances. So we agree on that high class white trash. You know, that's kind of like that. You know, that name right there kind of describes me to a T right there. That's my whole life story right there. High class white trash. I wonder if I'm related.
You really want me to comment on this.
That's it. But I mean, I would too. I would recommend arming them with lances. They pack a brutal punch with -2 and -2 on the charge. So how?
May I make a point on these guys?
Okay.
Okay. The ensorcelled weapons. That's what you're going to put on 5-man units.
Yeah.
Because they have a straight up rend of 1.
Yeah, but are you ever going to take Chaos Knights in 5?
Oh, yes. They're great. They're great at 5-man units. They ride out on those flanks and go after those war machines or go after those little annoying units that are peppering you from a distance.
All right.
And they have enough power to take you out at just 5 strong. 3 attacks, 3s by 3s, rend of 1. Oh, yeah. And that's just the knight. The horses get 2 attacks as well.
And they always do better than the riders.
Oh, that's the funniest part. We've laughed about that
for years.
Since 6th edition. Yeah,
for years.
Knights, the horses always do better than the knights.
But if
I was going to go with a 10-man unit or higher, I would definitely go with the lances.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is, a lot of people are saying the ensorcelled weapons, you know, they got a 1-inch reach, 3 attacks, 3s by 3s, -1, -1. I get it. But I got to tell you, the cursed lance, because to me, in my mind, even with a 5-man unit, I've always kind of been of the mind and thought that you're going to take these guys in 10-man units.
You will see most people take them in 10-man units. I don't ever think you're going to see 15-man units unless somebody's just like really trying to do a cavalry thing.
Well, because I look at it this way. These guys should always be ABC, always be charging.
Yep.
And with that, you're going to add 1 to the damage characteristic and improve the rend characteristic of the unit's curse lances by 2 if it made a charge in the same turn.
And don't forget, you can also use a wizard to put that spell on them so that they're re-rolling hits and wounds.
So now you've got ocular vision on this unit. You know, if you really wanted to be cheeky and do something interesting, you take a Chaos Lord on a demonic mount, as your general. This guy, he's got a command ability, and it's like the Knight's Chaos or the Chaos Knight something. I'm trying to look it up here before I ramble on. But anyways, what it says here is that in this command ability, here it is. It's the Knights of Chaos. In this command ability in your hero phase, if you do so, pick one friendly Chaos Knight, Chaos Chariot, or Gorebeast Chariot unit wholly within 18 inches of a friendly Slaves of Darkness hero with this command ability. You can reroll charge rolls for that unit and add one to the hit for attacks made by that unit until your next hero phase. The same unit cannot benefit from this command ability more than once per turn. So now picture this. You piggyback the Chaos Lord on Demonic Mount with the Chaos Sorcerer Lord on a unit of 10 of these guys with the lances.
It's devastation.
They're going to go through that enemy unit like shit to a tin horn. Absolutely.
Yes, the only chance you have is if you have some kind of a ward save. Otherwise, they're going to slaughter you.
Yeah, well, wouldn't it be cool? I'm going to kind of take a left turn again at Albuquerque. I'm going to digress here, but wouldn't it be cool if there was a way that you could do an all cavalry chaos army? I wonder if anyone's done that. Has anyone ever done?
Well, we
all
don't know yet. We don't
Slaves to Darkness army.
Well, we don't know yet. We don't know if there's something that allows you to make Chaos Knights battle line. I don't see any reason why you couldn't. If that was a rule. If something or someone makes them battle line, I don't see any reason why you could not take a Chaos Knights army or why you wouldn't.
Yeah.
They're great troops.
Well, I mean, they're not even battle line if, are they? No.
Well, we don't know yet. We don't know. We don't know what they're going to have in this new book. I believe Chaos Knights are already battle line as they are now before the book release.
Yeah.
I don't imagine that they're not going to be.
Yeah, because I was under the impression that... that they are slaves. If you're a Slaves to Darkness, I think in a regular Chaos army, maybe they're not, but in a Slaves to Darkness army, they're battle line.
Well, if they are, then I'll tell you what, if I was playing Slaves to Darkness,
right?
This would be the core of my army. I would be using groups of knights because they're fast. They've got great armor. They've got three wounds. And they're devastating on the charge.
Mm-hmm.
The only drawback is that once you get out beyond away from that wizard, then you're not going to be able to do that reroll stuff that you want to do. In other words, that wizard's going to have to be booking.
Yeah, but if you keep a unit of those guys, you know, tight within 10, you know, 18 inches, he should be able to get them in there.
That's my point, though. You've got to really be strategic with that wizard. Keeping him within range of that big 10-man unit so that when they go in, they've got it. They've got that reroll because these guys are going to be nastier than hell when they charge.
Oh, and you know, you're going to have to charge them. That's going to have to happen. I mean, like I said, ABC, always be charging with these guys. Because, you know, the thing is, too, and again, I would mark them in Nurgle. I think by doing that now, once they're into that rugby scrum, after they've charged, they got to be able to do something. You can't just, you know, you can't do the old Bretonian trick and charge them in and retreat them out. I mean, I guess you could, but you know, I think this unit here would also be a great enemy unit blocker, if you will, too. So I think you put the mark of Nurgle on them. Now they're negative one to hit in close combat.
In my opinion, Chaos are perfect. They are exactly what they should be. They have everything they need to be successful as a unit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think so too. And I think it goes without saying I wonder if you're ever going to, I mean, Chaos Marauder Horsemen, I think they might have a place. I know we've kind of jumped ship here on the topic, but I mean, let's kind of talk about Chaos Marauder Horsemen here. These guys have a 6+ save. They're kind of a, you know, the weeny little brother of the Chaos Knights. But do they have? They got a javelin. They got a throwing weapon. They got a 12-inch javelin. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe get these guys out in front as a screen for your Chaos Knights, if you will. I guess.
Yeah, that would be actually a great kind of combo army to have the Marauder Horsemen out there to basically be the charge blockers.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as they come in and destroy them, which you could care less about,
right?
Then you move in the knights. And don't forget, these Chaos Knights have those rune shields. So that
mortal wound, ward save, yeah.
Oh yeah, five up, and it's not from, and it says, anytime you allocate a mortal wound to this unit with a Chaos rune shield on a 5+, the mortal wound is negated. Now that means some Skaven player takes that lightning cannon and shoots you.
Warp lightning cannon, yeah.
That's it. You get a 5+ ward save. In other words, it's not like only in combat, it's straight up. Right. 5-up ward save against mortals.
Yeah, and you know, the nice thing about the Marauder Horsemen is these guys can retreat and still shoot. So there could be some good tactic shenanigans there as far as if you're going to bring your enemy units in, have them, you know, double envelopment, retreat out, shoot you, you know, then maybe your Chaos Knights, you know, charge in.
You take those Marauder Horsemen and you line them up 5 long in front of your Chaos Knights. They're your charge blockers. When you want to charge, you just move those Marauder Horsemen out of the way, and in you go.
Oh, you know what? I think my idea for an all-chaos cavalry army just got thrown in the crapper. The Chaos Sorcerer Lord lost his steed. He's not.
You don't need him. As long as you move him up to the 12-inch line, and you and your knights are – like, when you start your turn, your knights will be within range of you to cast that spell. So you cast the spell, the knights are going to move up, you run the wizard and keep him behind the knights, he'll still be within 12 inches.
I wonder how many Chaos players right now that are listening just literally just started taking notes.
But I mean,
with your little rundown there. No, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, he's going to be at the 12-inch line. So you're just going to run him and keep him within range of the knights. I mean, they're not going to go that far. And you don't need to run the knights. They move 10 inches, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
So he's still going to be... he's still going to be within 12 inches even after you've moved up that first turn. Just keep him behind the knights. Who cares?
Or, you know what would be another probably better mark with these guys? Probably be Slan Ash. They can run and charge.
Or that. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about these Chaos Knights is that you can choose any one of those. You could choose any one of those marks, and this unit is still going to be effective.
Okay, what would you do, Nurgle or Slan Ash?
Because
I don't think Korn rerolling ones. I don't think that's a big deal. And I don't remember what the hell Zeech does, but it's probably something pretty stupid.
I guess I would probably use Nurgle.
Okay.
But I would never play Slaanesh. You know me. I just don't like Slaanesh.
The pervert army.
Nah, I don't get into that theme. But the Nurgle I would definitely use. Possibly Korn. I don't know what Zeench does for a mark. Do you?
No, off the top of my head, I don't. I mean, I can find out, but I don't think it's really that.
Bottom line is, I would definitely, because I like playing themes, I probably, to tell you the truth, I would probably go with Korn.
Okay.
Just because I've always liked Korn the most out of all the gods. Really? Out of all the Chaos gods. Yeah, I like Korn. I like the... just get up in their face and punch them right square between the eyes.
Well, yeah, so says the troll player, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly. Smash them and bash them.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't recall, you know, what the different mark is for Zeech. I mean, if anyone out there kind of knows, you know, if you want to leave it in the comments, we'll thank you for it. But, as far as the marks, I think regardless whatever Zeech does or doesn't do, I think that, you know, Nurgle or... to me, Nurgle or Slan Ash would make sense in an all cavalry army. Now we have a couple of people that just chimed in, that says, you know, we got one of our listeners says Korn automatically makes your units way cooler. Now, you know, okay. So I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, high class white trash there, you know, he agrees with me, man. Nurgles. Yes. Us trailer park white trash people. We got to stick together, man. That's we're like family. That's it.
Are you just like trying to set yourself up tonight?
What are you talking about? This is like this is like a pinnacle thing here. This is good stuff.
You know, now that I come to think about it, you do belong with Nurgle. there is some element of truth to what you just said.
Nurgle is you know what's funny is I've said it 1,000 times. You know, I don't play a Nurgle army. I don't. But the storyline of
It's great. Nurgle's hilarious.
Well, not just hilarious as far as them being mirthful and jovial while their guts are hanging out of their bunghole and all that kind of crap. But what's great about them is their backstories. I think they're best writers. Personally, I think they're best. I think the best writers Black Library or Games Workshop or whoever it is has writes for Nurgle. I mean, you look at the stories of, you know, the Glotkin, Torglug. There's just so many iconic characters.
Well, sure. Look at the story about when Nurgle captured the elven deity. He didn't kill her. He kept her in a cage like a bird. Like he's amused. Like he amuses himself. he likes watching his plagues create new mayhem in the world, in the mortal realms. I mean, the guy is, as a character, Nurgle is Papa Grand, or as they call him, Grandfather Nurgle or Papa Nurgle. It's hilarious. It's great because, like you said, he's mirthful as he's watching you die of typhus.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's giggling about it. He looks at it as a gift. I mean, the whole thing is so freaking creepy, but it does. It captivates me. I mean, I've read the Maggotkin book. I love that. And anytime I get my hands on anything.
Nurgle's great.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what's funny is and we're kind of, again, we're pulling the taffy here on the topic, but I think that Nurgle to me is probably the most captivating of the chaos gods. You know what we ought to do? We ought to plan in the next couple of shows coming up here. You and I are going to sit down and we're going to go in depth as far as the psychology of all the chaos gods. I know that we've kind of touched on that before with Grimdark Live. We've talked about it in the past. We've even had, you know, professionals in the industry kind of talk about it a little bit, but I'd like to really kind of get into it and really kind of, you know, get into each one.
Yeah. No, see, I'm of the complete opposite. I like Khorne. Because Khorne to me is most like destruction. Khorne is, I don't care what your politics are. I don't care, you know, what you believe in, what you don't believe in. My goal is to slaughter you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are the opponent. You die.
Well, I mean, yeah, I get that. I mean, but I still think you can achieve that with Nurgle.
But I love the simplicity of Khorne because he's so much like a destruction god, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's keep rolling. So, folks, that was kind of our news bleeding into our first topic there with Slaves of Darkness finally out, finally dropping. It's going to be in everybody's sweaty palms this Saturday. So, if you guys got the book, and you guys got the Get Started, you know, you guys are in for a hell of an army. But I would really like to see. I'm kind of thinking about this, man. I might have to try this if I can work up the gumption. An all cavalry chaos army.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, it's a great army.
Well, I you know, it takes time, man. You gotta let the stew simmer a little bit. You gotta think about it. You gotta plan it. It's gotta be perfect. You know what I mean? Like me, it's gotta be perfect.
Yes, because when I think of people who plan things out, I think of you, man.
Hey, listen, you know what? Planning takes away from the activity, man. You just got to – sometimes you got to throw your balls over your shoulder and charge into the fire, man. You just got to get into it.
What was that Disney cartoon? Squirrel! That's you, man.
Thank you. Thank you very little. Thank you very little. Hey gang, I wanted to take a break in today's show to introduce one of our sponsors and a great store for all of your hobby needs. That's GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois. Open 7 days a week, 12 to 12.
GameStorm Gaming has got you covered for all of your hobby and gaming needs. They got Magic the Gathering, War Machine, X-Wing, Game of Thrones, Force of Will card game, PC gaming and repair, Warhammer 40K, and Age of Sigmar, and a ton more. Grab paints, brushes, cases, dice, and a lot more at GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois.
Stop in and see John and the gang there at GameStorm Gaming, located at 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, or check them out on their website at GameStormGaming.com. Again, that's www.GameStormGaming.com.
They also stay open past midnight for special cases and events, so get over there and get your nerd on with GameStorm Gaming. 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, 630-243-9330. Again, that's GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois.
GameStorm Gaming is a proud sponsor of Grimdark Live. We hope to see you there. So let's move on to the next topic. So, Steve, you were going to kind of get into a little bit of as far as a Christmas or a holiday or whatever your wish list, whatever your practice wish list for the new year, armies you want to play or face in the coming new year. So let's get into this.
Okay, so I was thinking about, of all the armies that are left, at least the ones that we know of, you know, the ones that we know are coming. You know, God
only knows. Oh, you mean the books that are incoming, Seraphon and Siege?
Well,
and
no. I meant not necessarily. I meant, yes, like Seraphon, Caradhran, Overlords, we know are coming. We know Siege is coming. High Elves and Dark Elves. Those are the five that we know are coming. I would probably throw Soulblight in there as well sometime in October next year.
Yeah, all right, I'm with you.
Which I'm dying for. No pun intended.
Yeah, you're vampires, man.
Oh,
no pun intended.
But I'm
bummed. Hip the Beal. Try the waitresses. He's here all night, folks.
I think of all the armies that we are assuming are coming out next year, there are two armies, one of which I intend to play, the other I want to face. There's two armies coming out that fit into that category. Number one, if I were going to pick one Christmas wish list army that I just am dying to face, it is the Dark Elves. I cannot wait to see what Games Workshop does with Malekith, what they do with his army.
Malorian now.
Of it. Oh, well, I'll always call him Malekith, but I cannot wait to see what they do with this army, because I know that GW has been planning these two elven armies for years, and they have not rushed them. And I'm happy that they didn't rush them. I want them to take their time. I want them to have all new models, and I want their rules to be off the charts. I want the elven armies to be what elven armies should be.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, so let's hang on that before you get to your second one. You know, I kind of want to investigate here a little bit about the Dark Elves. I don't know what they're going to be called. I mean, Malorian or Malekith is, you know, obviously, as everyone knows, he's the god in charge of the shadow realm of Ulgu. Am I saying that right? U-L-G-U or
Ulgu.
Ulgu. Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, we know that he's going to get a new model. We know that he's going to get, and you know the model.
And it's going to be incredible.
Well, because he's in the lore, he's fused with his dragon.
Yeah, he's a dragon now, exactly.
So, you know, and I think we're pretty sure that the Dark Elves likely are not going to return as they were, you know, in part because...
Nor should they.
They're
not the same people anymore.
Well, I mean, the Exile War Scrolls, the past Dark Elf units, you know, that no longer exist, you know, for the most part. I think there's going to be aspects of Dark Elf culture that are being placed into the new Elf factions. I think that GW has to think about something with that, how that's going to, you know, choreograph
I think their fluff is going to be much more grim than we even anticipate.
Yeah.
These are elves that are living in the shadows. These are elves that live in a realm of shadow. So they are going to have, I imagine that the rules, a lot of their rules are going to be stealth rules.
Okay.
These are guys that are going to be ambushing you. They're going to be hitting you from a distance with war machines of some kind, whether it's bolt throwers or something new. This is an army, in my opinion, that is going to be almost ninja-like. And they should, because they're using the shadows to attack their enemies.
Well, yeah, and for all we know, they might even be called Shadow Elves. But I mean, you know, we've already been kind of introduced to Shadow Elves. I'm just gonna keep calling them that, because if you think about what we got with the Malign Portents, we got the Mistweaver Saya, and we've got the Shard. I can't think of his name. The Tenenbrail Shard or whatever it is.
Tenenbrail Shard, yeah.
The two characters there. Now, they've already kind of, you know, hinted that, you know, these guys have abilities to strike from the shadows. I think the
As
Shard guys
should.
Got a shadow strike. Mistweaver Saya, her spell is pretty, you know, the illusory assault. Basically, she's using illusions to cast on you. At a 24
yes,
inch
and
range.
That's what that army's magic is probably going to look like as well. It's going to be illusionary magic.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think they've already kind of hinted at it, especially when you look
Great.
All the way back to Malign Portents, which came out
Love
in,
it.
You know, 18. So, you know, I think that's definitely going to be coming out. And I wonder if they're going to, you remember the old Dark Elves with the bolt throwers and,
sure.
you know, I just wonder.
Played them. Many yeah. years I played them.
Yeah. So, you know, okay, that's a good one. What's your second one?
Well, the second one, I think you already know what I'm about to say, is the vampires.
Soulblight. Now, are you saying play against or play them?
Oh, I want to play. I'm going to play them. Yes, that's going to be my army for 2020. I guarantee it as soon as they're out.
Yeah.
I just want to open up by saying I absolutely loathe and despise Nagash. And not as a storyline. I just don't like the fact. I just don't like the model in the game. Okay, but I'm saying I want the vampires to be what I've imagined they've always been, and that's that rebel faction. That their allegiance to Nagash is hanging on by a thread.
And Nagash vampires, knows it.
As we've talked about many times in the past, vampires are the ultimate narcissists. They don't want to follow anyone. They don't want to be beholden to anyone. And I imagine that when this book comes out, I'm praying that they kind of go back to their gothic roots.
Right.
And that the vampires are kind of like most of the lore of vampires and other media, that they're based on a council.
Yeah.
That vampires, that they have these big covens or councils of vampires, and that they would be plotting at every second to find a way to release themselves from Nagash's control.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you bring up the Soul Blight, because again, I think the Dark Elves, like we just talked about, I think that army is, you know, I don't think that that's very viable. I mean, Cities of Sigmar aside, obviously it's not a viable army, but you know, recently, and I don't know exactly when, but maybe it was at one of our war meets, we were out gaming somewhere. I actually played a guy that had a Soulblight army. And if I remember right, it was two vampire lords on foot. I think one was Conrad, I think. And the other, you know, was, you know, maybe a conversion or something. And I think he also had a vampire lord and a zombie dragon, which I think is pit and parcel. I think any Soulblight army is going to have a vampire lord and a zombie dragon.
Yeah. It's in almost every single Soulblight army.
Yeah. And I think he had some Blood Knights. And he also had 30-ish skeletons with sword, and he had some grave guard. And I got to tell you, so my whole point about kind of describing this is even with everything being so outdated, you know, Soulblight kind of being a faction within the greater Legions of Nagash book, you know, he played a hell of a game. And if I remember right, he was playing the Castellans of the Crimson Keep Battalion, I think.
Yeah, it's the one where you have the Blood Knights.
Yeah, exactly. And I got to tell you, it was a damn good game. So, you know, I still tip my hat, and I think that if they do come out, because let's face it, I mean, Legions of Nagash, you know, I think you know, you look now, they're kind of parlaying Nagash into other books, Bone Reapers, and I think he's even in the Nighthaunt book. I think that they're understanding that. What is the Legions of Nagash will eventually kind of fan out into. I think Soulblight is coming in 2020. I guess is what I'm sputtering about.
I would almost guarantee it.
Yeah. So
that is going to be the big late release for Death next year.
You think Soulblight? Well, you're pining for October, like Halloween time.
Yeah, I think it's exactly when they're coming out. I think they're going to be the Halloween release. That's going to be the Halloween release.
Interesting.
Which kind of sucks, because that means I have to wait pretty much another year before they come out. But you know what? If the army's good, it'll be worth the wait.
So what do you think is going to come out first, though? I mean, and again, okay, that's Soulblight. We think that's going to be October. What do you think is going to be coming out first? Are you going to be High Elves or Dark Elves first?
No, I think we're getting the Dark Elves first, actually. I don't think we're going to get Tyrion's army until after the Dark Elves.
Yeah.
I think the line is going to be somewhere along the lines of the line of release, I meant to say. It's going to be something like either Seraphon or Tzeentch.
Okay.
And I think they're going to come one after the other. So I think it's going to be Seraphon, Tzeentch, Caradhran Overlords. I think you're probably going to see, and those are, of course, all rehashes of armies.
You think they're going to come back out with another Caradhran Overlords book?
I do. I think the Caradhran Overlords, they need a rewrite. That book is
hysterical. We got to have another show on that, because I think, again, I was just saying this to Evan the other day. I think that army, again, is another flop. But
no one plays them.
Yeah, well, you know, last war meet Dave did, and he did a pretty darn good job.
But that's one guy we have out of our entire group. I mean, we have how many guys that we, you know, regularly game with?
Yeah, that's true.
And one I mean, they're almost as non-existent as the Fire Slayers.
Well, and for two different reasons. I think Courage and Overlord is a flop in many regards as far as the continuity within the Army book. But I think Fire Slayers, there's a financial barrier of entry there. That's a yes. Damn expensive army to play.
That is one of the reasons. Yeah, that's one of the reasons why you never see them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're boring to play because they're too damn powerful.
Well, you know, it's funny that I've. Do you really think? I mean, let's put it this way. Okay, they have a ward save. They have rend. You know, they can tunnel. They can deep strike. All that kind of stuff. I don't know that I'd call that boring.
Here's why I think it's boring. That number one, they win too much. Number two, when your opponent is, let me just tell you a very short story.
Sure.
When we were at Holy Havoc,
I like the irony there. Fire Slayers, short story. Go right ahead.
Only you would see that.
When they fight an army, it's a short fight. All right,
folks, this is, you see what I have to deal with here. At any rate, Holy Havoc. I played against I was going up against a guy who was no joke, almost brought to the point of tears of frustration at how many times those dirty little buggers were able to make their ward saves. And I could visibly see it on the face of my opponent. Like it was just so damn frustrating for him to face them. Now, some people would laugh at that and say, I don't care. Nah, I don't want my opponent. I mean, look, I want to give my opponent a run for their money.
Right.
You know, I don't mind if I'm doing well, but if you're getting the look of like WTF every time you're playing them, nah, not so fun.
Yeah, sure.
So, which is one of the reasons why I don't like playing them, you know, anymore, because of the fact that they are so ridiculously over the top.
Mm-hmm.
I want an army that can hit hard like my trolls, but my trolls have weaknesses, and I like that. I don't want them overpowered. So that's the reason why I kind of have stepped away from the Fire Slayers.
Okay. All right.
But anyways, getting back to that, our line of releases, I think that the Dark Elves are going to be like the big pre-summer release.
Okay. All right.
You're going to see the High Elves immediately after them.
Because okay, so I late summer, two, early fall, all those High Elves?
Elves are going to come, in my opinion, and this is, you know, just my opinion, I think they're going to come May, June, and then High Elves are going to be the July release, the big release.
Yeah.
That's going to be the big... Tyrion's army, in my opinion, is going to be one of the biggest releases of the year.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, the only thing I'm afraid of, and again, I don't, you know, I keep doing this to everyone. I keep taking, you know, left turn at Albuquerque. I really hope they don't come out with like this. I got this thing in my mind that the new High Elves, and of course, that was my first army. I still have a love for High Elves. I don't want them to come out and be like these fluttery little butterfly angel elves.
Well, we have no evidence of that. You know, I keep hearing that rumor. Where is the evidence of that rumor?
There is none. There is none. But I think it's
in everyone's speculation.
Mind. Yeah, I think yeah. It's in everyone's mind.
Yeah, I search the net all the time. I cannot see one validated piece of evidence where someone can point to something that a GW rep has said or something else that says that there are going to be angel elves. I don't know where that rumor got started from.
Somebody somewhere said that, and it's probably like a hypothetical. And then
it spread like wildfire.
Yeah, it really did. And you know, and again, obviously because I just sputtered it off just now. But you know, it does. It leaves like a. I don't know. I just hope that they don't do that. I mean, you know, let's put it this way. You know, High Elves are always that army that I think, you know, a lot of people can get in and play Dark Elves. They can play Shadow Elves. They have that really cool, you know, everyone kind of likes the, you know, the anti-hero, the bad guy. You know,
yes.
The High Elves, you know, they always somehow, when I was playing them, they always got attributed to like that, you know, like the butler, you know. everyone did a British accent whenever they talked about High Elves.
They're the epitome of nobility.
Yeah.
So when you think of a High Elf, most people immediately think of Elrond. They think of Galadriel.
Yeah.
They think of the nobility of the Tolkien elves.
I always think about the fact that through that whole movie, whether it was the High Elves or their damn eagles, they were saving everyone.
Yes, and I think that that is, although Tolkien would have had a heart attack if he would have seen Wood Elves show up at Helm's Deep, because they never did.
That's true.
That's okay. I digress.
Yeah.
Yeah, people look at elves as this noble race, that they're the ultimate in grace, the ultimate in finesse, the ultimate in martial prowess.
Yeah.
So that's why I think people are kind of imprinting their own kind of beliefs of what they should be, which is probably where this whole angel elf thing came from.
Probably.
Now, if it turns out that they are angel elves, okay, let's see what they do. Let's see why they are what they are. If there's some way they can justify it, great.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I you know, it's funny. As we were kind of talking, you know, and also kind of piggybacking off of our chaos cavalry army, I was kind of thinking about that army that I played, that Soulblight army I played not too long ago, and in compilation with this, and I'm gonna have to piggyback on that I would like to play against that army. I hope they do come out with a book. I would love to play against. I mean, I can't remember the last time I played against an all vampire army prior.
Wait
to
until October, my friend, and
well,
you will.
Prior to about three or so months ago. But you know what's funny is you think about those armies, you know, the vampire lord and a zombie dragon. You'd think about who's that Prince Vordry?
Prince Vordry.
Yeah. You take a vampire lord on foot, and I love the Blood Knights. I don't, maybe it's a horse thing with me. I have no idea what it is. But I would think, to me, if you were to take a Soulblight army, and I'm grabbing the book here, man, so I'm gonna talk through this. So here we go. I'm doing this on the fly. We're doing it live, man. We're doing it live. So take a Soulblight army.
Okay.
Let's say you take your bloodline, Swift Death, right? Yep. Mortal Realm, let's pick one here. Ulgu. We're going to go back to that one. Sure. So you got a Vampire Lord on Dragon. We'll make him the general. He's got the Death Lance, the Shield, and the Chalice. You got to have the Chalice, man.
Yes, the Chalice is a must.
You take the Artifact. I would give him the Doppelganger Cloak.
Well, I would either give him that, or I would give him the ethereal amulet to make it so that he's a three-up save.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good one too.
Or you could take the Griff Feather Charm, which means he's minus one to hit.
Yeah,
would give him ethereal, the ethereal amulet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess either one, ethereal amulet or doppelganger
mist form.
It's six one of dozen in the other at that point, really. I mean, yeah,
definitely mist form.
Lore of Vampire. I'd probably go with. Oh man, probably I like this Amnesthein Pinions. That's a pretty good one.
Yes, that is the spell that a lot of people
use. I would go with that one. On my prince here, Lore of Vampires. I don't know. The only other one I think would be this Vile Transference. I think that would be a good one.
That's a good one too. What a lot of people do when they play that army is they play two vampire lords on zombie dragons. One of them is Prince Vordry. The other one is the vampire lord up with the ethereal amulet.
Interesting.
It's a very hard hitting combo. And then you just, of course, you could take your trash troops, or you can take your knights. It just depends on how you want to build the army.
Well, right now I'm kind of on a knight kick, so I would definitely take, you know, three units of five blood knights. I'd probably throw in some dire wolves in there too, just as a good
they're not bad.
You know,
I mean,
good
blood
blocking
knights
unit.
Are good.
And then of course with my vampire lord on foot, let's see, I'd probably go with probably for an artifact, I'd probably give him the sigil of the
Well, you'd have to have a battalion, so you'd have to take the bastions of the keep.
Or yeah, the Castellans. Yeah.
You'd have to take the Castellan battalion. So,
yeah.
But
yeah,
if you did, remember, a vampire on foot is very effective. Any death unit, a vampire on foot, it's any death unit gets plus one attack.
So oh, just that's, think that's true. That yeah, could, that's oh, right. That's
just
true.
Think how nasty that could be.
Yeah.
You put that now, here's something I was playing around with Nighthaunt. If you take a vampire lord as an ally in your Nighthaunt army, and you take Bladegeist as your troops, or Grimwraith Reapers, or whatever the hell they're called.
Right.
If you take those in your army, you have that vampire. Remember, it says any death unit.
Right.
So he can put that ability on that unit of Reapers or Bladegeist.
Yeah,
and
right.
Now, at least in the case of the Bladegeist, when they charge in, now it's four attacks.
Oof.
Yeah.
That's
a
great point.
Well, he could do it to anything. You have to remember, he could also do it. It says any death unit. So he could put that on the Morghasts as well.
Hmm.
So, I mean, if you had Morghasts in your army, you took a vampire ally, he cast that, he could use that command ability on your Morghasts. Now they're plus one attack. Threes by threes, rend of two, damage three. I'm in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
You've sold me.
Yeah, I think you've sold me on that's an army I'm looking forward to. I got to piggyback on that one. But you know what's funny? And I know that, that we're kind of at a point where it's hard to believe, but you know, we're kind of at a point to where we have to start rolling on here. But we're about halfway through, right? General's Handbook 19, somewhere around there. And when I think of the armies that were kind of, you know, shuffled in with GHB 19, right? I think mm-hmm. of Skaven, Legions of Nagash, Flesh Eater Courts, sure. Daughters usual. Of Cain, the usual. Yeah. I think that overall, I mean, you know, when you look at Flesh Eater Courts, what I'm about to say, Grizzle Gore is really pretty much it for them.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think all those armies, Skaven, Legions of Nagash, Flesh Eater Courts, Daughters of Cain, I think they were all knocked down a bit since its introduction. Khorne is looking much better now with you know, cheaper skull cannons and bloodthirsters. I know that the Road Warrior, Justin, you know, he plays the hell out of that army, as well as the changes to the meta warping Grizzle Gore, which I, you know, obviously this, you know, that Savage Strike, you know. But with
it's devastating.
Yeah.
Devastating.
Yeah, I mean, with Iron Jaw, Zeech, and Seraphon, I think even Seraphon without a book, along with Zeech with even a, you said it in last week's show.
They're Zeech still a viable, very viable army.
But I think Iron Jaws with the new Orc War Clans book, I think they were significantly improved. You know, I think everything else, you know, obviously, you know, the weird anomaly there is Cities of Sigmar, but I think everything else pretty much has stayed the same. So when I look at, you know, armies that I look forward to playing, I pretty much would have to say this. It's either going to be Soulblight for me or Stormcast. And I'll say why. Because Stormcast always, it seems like every year they get a new freaking book. At least they have been, I think, right? I'm kind of saying that, you know, tongue in cheek here. But Stormcast Deep Strike builds, you know, both melee and ballista drops are, you know, even though they're a little bit worse than what they were, they still have double tap, you know, long strikes and Drakoths, so they're relatively stronger than before. I think there's going to be some new advancements with that army, since that's kind of the pinnacle army. I'd like to see what's happened there, because even though I don't care for Stormcast as an army, I really appreciate them as an opponent. They really bring out the best in my gaming. I know that when I play Stormcast or Skaven, I'm in for a hell of a game.
Yeah, I never have a problem when I play Stormcast. I think they're always an enjoyable army to play against. Skaven, I don't really see too much of. It's mostly Evan.
Yeah.
Right. And Evan's not really playing them anymore. So we've kind of had like a, you know, kind of like a vacuum of Skaven for a while.
Yeah, and you know what's funny with their gnaw holes? I mean, Skaven units are also grossly undercosted, and Slaanesh summoning is pretty freaking broken. You know, I'm just kind of running into Slaanesh now. You know, it's funny when I think of armies that I really am looking forward to playing. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say here is it's a tough call. I mean, Soulblight, I like the idea of a new book that would really entice me to want to be one of the first opponents up against them. Maybe even build a Blood Knight army, but I'd have to
it
say
will
that
will be my premier army when they come out. That will be my new troll army.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think about Slaanesh, too. I mean, it's a very strong army in the right meta, but it gets bullied by hard-shooting armies. Even now, even if you run two Keepers of Secrets.
Every person does.
Right. But they still get bullied by shooting armies and armies with that spam one-wound models. You know, unfortunately, the meta has lots of one-wound models out there, and armies have... And armies that have multi-wound models also tend to be the ones that shoot well. So I think Slaanesh has been parked a little bit. I think people are starting to figure out Slaanesh. So I'm not going to say them unless they get some kind of an improvement. So yeah, I'll kind of leave it at that. I'll say that Soulblight when they get a new book, and Stormcast when they absolutely get their new book, because they always do, because that's the, you know, that's the favorite child right now. You know,
I think the surprise book of next year, the one that people are going to completely overlook, but I think it's going to have devastating new rules, is going to be Seraphon.
Yeah, you know,
I think that's going to be the sleeper. And I'm not saying that they're going to be better than High Elves or Soulblight. I'm just saying Seraphon are phenomenal right now with their teleportation abilities.
Well, they got Thunderquake. They got Thunderquake too. You know, that's pretty good.
We're going to see more of that stuff, that kind of stuff, with their new book. They're going to get better.
Because I think right now the current top-tier armies are simply this. And again, I'm going to use some specifics here because I'm just kind of, as you were talking, I'm kind of writing down on a little piece of paper here kind of some thoughts. But I think the current top-tier armies are Stormcast with Anvil Strike, Fire Slayers, both Hermdar and the Lofnir Forge Brethren. I think Seraphon with their Thunderquake, even though without a book, I think they're pretty badass. Followed, obviously, by Skaven, Flesh Eater Courts, Slaanesh, and Daughters of Cain. But I think Slaanesh and Daughters of Cain have been figured out. You know, Daughters of Cain, kill the general, kill the, you know, the
stop the Hagnar five.
The Hagnar, and then that's done. Skaven, you know, find a way to block out their gnaw holes, and they become kind of an easy target. And Flesh Eater Courts, you know, I would say that, you know, all you got to do is, you know, again, just like with Daughters of Cain, if you want to get rid of Grizzlegore, kill the general. You know, which that's, you know, not that easy to do, but you know what?
Easier said than done, but yeah, you kill the general. You're right. Kill the general.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, there it is, man. I think that's you got me thinking, man. I'm really looking forward to next year. And I know that we kind of touched on just a little bit of what we're going to be talking on next year. We're going to be doing our 2019 wrap up and looking forward to 2020. And I still have the armies that we all said at the end of 2018. Let's see. It was Steve, Sean, Gary and Randy, we all talked about, and myself, we all said at the end of 2018 who we thought the top armies of 2019 were going to be. So we're going to revisit those answers back from 2018, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the upcoming 2020 and who we think the top armies are going to be.
A public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres. The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show. Speaking of armies, do you mind if I kind of segue before we get on to the next couple of points here in the show to kind of talk about what motivates you to play a particular army?
Go.
So here's kind of what I want to, I mean, is it okay if we segue into this?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. So here are my thoughts, you know, in all this talking about armies and I got the whole, Chaos Knights, you know, as a cavalry army swimming in my head. We talked about Soul Blights, all these great possibilities of armies that are coming out and could be coming out, you know, Slaves of Darkness dropping on Saturday. So it got me thinking here. In choosing an army to play in this little game of ours of Age of Sigmar, there's a pantheon of reasons why I think somebody buys, builds, paints, and plays an army. Sometimes that army works well for the player, and other times that army ends up on eBay within 3 months. Case in point, Beast of Chaos. You know, when that army first came out, people went absolutely nuts for it. It sold like crazy, except the one thing that Joe and Jane Gamer forgot, that Beast of Chaos is one of the most unforgiving armies in the game. One mistake, and that's that. I've been playing Beast of Chaos since they were originally called the Beast of Chaos. And the one thing that they've made that's never changed from 6th edition, 7th edition, 8th edition, Rank and Flank, Age of Sigmar, End Times, whatever it might be, is that they've always been a very unforgiving army. You pay for every mistake you make with that army. But there are folks like myself that happen to like that type of an army because it offers an additional challenge in my mind, being that they are unforgiving when it comes to mistakes. Does that make sense, Steve?
Yeah.
But maybe
because
someone,
I've seen it.
Yeah, exactly. Because maybe someone is drawn to a particular allegiance. You know, that's why they play an army, order, chaos, destruction, or death. Or a particular faction, Gloomspite Gitz, Cities of Sigmar, Nighthaunt, or the new Slaves of Darkness that's going to be coming out. A lot of folks are drawn to a particular character, and they build their armies around that character. Nagash.
Or model.
Or model, yeah. Nagash, Gordrak, Alariel, now Archaon, for instance. Or did you build your armies based on the synergies and functionality of that army? You know, like, say, I would say the best synergistic army probably in the game right now has to be Gloomspite Gitz, you know, pound for pound. Or here's the question. Are you a meta whore? You know, are you somebody that, really doesn't give a crap? And Steve, we know a couple of guys like that, don't we? One in particular.
Yeah, we know a few.
You know, there's meta whores out there. They don't care about
but
the
lore. But
here's
one thing I will say.
Okay.
And I don't mean to break your momentum here, but this is what I think is important to say.
Okay, go.
And one of these so-called meta whores, as you put it, has made a very good point. When I enter a tournament, I enter a tournament to win.
Okay,
and
yeah.
So if you decide to play an army that is not apt to win, that is your own fault. And I completely 100% agree with that. However, you have to understand that there are parts of this game that are meant for certain types of people. If you are going into tournaments, I'm sorry, you have no excuses. You're sure. Going into a tournament, and the idea of a tournament is to win. If you are going to be a casual gamer, like you and I talk about, and I kind of consider myself in that category right now.
That's what every poker player says, folks.
Well,
trust me.
This guy
will take your lights out.
And honestly, I'm just at a point now, as I jokingly say, where I just want to smash things and throw rocks with my trolls.
Right.
I don't want to have that pressure on me like a tournament player has, because if you're going to be that tournament player, you have to be practicing 2 to 3 times a week. You have to be playing all the scenarios. You have to be playing a wide variety of opponents. Some gaming communities do not have that. Okay. We have zero regular death players. Zero. Now, I know someone's going to say, wait a minute, what about Rob? What about Kyle? We don't, those guys game with us, but they're not gaming with us every week.
Right.
So, and Rob's been playing as Idoneth forever, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
So we're not getting a wide berth of armies. Like, when was the last time you played a Stormcast army?
Oh, good God. A year ago?
See what I'm saying? That's
yeah.
my point. No
yeah.
Stormcast, no Skaven, no Slaanesh. So we're not facing some of those armies that are winning those tournaments. So once again, I don't have a problem with the meta whores. They are entering a tournament with the purpose to win.
Yeah, and look, I get that. But that's a motivation for them. So that would be their
exactly.
motivation
that's
to play
their motivation.
Army.
They want to fill the trophy case.
Yeah, and you know, on last week's show, I'm gonna put you on the spotlight here again. On last
Go
week's show, you said something very interesting when we were talking about armies. That you
sure.
said that you and look, folks, there are people like Steve out there. Of course, you know, a lot of them are behind padded walls with medication and you know, psychotherapists and a lot of excuses that the families talk about over Thanksgiving dinner. But there are people out there like Steve. But on last week's show, Steve said something pretty interesting. And I cued in on it because, again, it's a reason why some people play an army. You're a very specific guy when it comes to picking an army. Now, you've played, I would say, in the years and years and years that I've known you, you've played every pantheon of an army. You
Correct.
You played Skaven, which would be considered chaos.
Mm-hmm.
You've played Order. You played your Fire Slayers. You're playing Destruction with your Trogoths. You played Squigs. I mean, you played your Daughters of Cain. You've played every army that I can think of in the 12, 13 years that I've known you. So
sure,
let me throw this out there. You said something that's pretty profound because I think your sentiments have changed. You said that you would not play an army ever again if it doesn't have three things, and I quote,
Correct.
Rend, an aftersave, and at least a 2-inch reach.
And that is all in one. For instance, I have a new saying, and this is developed through AOS. No rend, no ward save, no deal. So okay. if my troop type does not have a ward save, if it does not have rend, and I don't need a negative two rend, but if it does not have rend and it does not have a ward save of some kind, I am not playing it.
Interesting. So, I mean, let's, that wasn't always your sentiment.
No, God, no. But in this new game, there are so many opportunities for you to get hit by mortal wounds.
True.
There are so many opportunities for you to have no armor due to your opponent having rend. So you have to have that backup save.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why I started playing Fire Slayers, because because Fire Slayers have a 4+ ward save.
Okay.
When they're surrounded by their characters, when their characters are within like 10-inch range of them, they have a 4+ ward.
True.
So I got sick and tired of getting sniped by mortal wound attacks and stuff. So, and what I love about the trolls is that the entire army has a ward save, including the shamans.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, what makes, well, I mean, like we just talked about in the beginning of the show, I mean, when we talk about that balancing act, right? On one hand, you've got, sure. how do you win in this game? You know, do you have staying power to stay on those objectives?
Well, there are very few. See, one of the reasons I love the trolls, and yes, I'm just tooting my army's own horn, but one of the reasons I love my trolls, number one, everybody always says, well, you know, you're never going to win a game because of objectives and you're going to always be outnumbered. Okay. Not every army I face is going to have nobblers of 60 strong.
Beautiful.
You can't
just
hold,
gorgeous.
You cannot hold an objective if you're not alive.
That's true.
My trolls will come up and they will kill anything that is sitting on an objective to the last man. Their right. average damage per combat phase is 30. 30 right. wounds.
Right.
Most units only have 30 wounds.
Yeah.
Most units only have, at the best, a four up save.
Yeah.
So with a negative two rend, they're dropping to a 6. They're dying.
Yeah, that's very, very true. I mean,
so, and on top of it, my trolls have a 5+ armor save by a 5+ ward save. So even when they swing back at me, no matter what, I have a 33% chance of saving.
Yeah.
Even if you eliminate my armor, 33% chance.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's something, because I think we need those after saves now, as we like to call them.
Yeah.
And for me, I have my preferences, as I tend to lean towards destruction now, but I have really leaned.
Totally.
Yeah. But I've really leaned lately towards armies that have their respective builds that have two things that are you know, really synonymous with exactly what Steve is saying, rend and an after save, i.e. ward save. But that isn't always the case, because I do have a gimmick army, as Steve alluded to, albeit a very powerful gimmick army in my Ogre Maw Tribes, a.k.a. Nobbler 300 army. This is an army where I have 300 Nobblers in it. Now, it does crack me up that one of the best builds...
And folks, he's not joking. He literally has a 300 Nobbler mm-hmm. army.
Yeah, yeah, I really do. And it's a beautiful army. And what cracks me up... because
What'd
I,
you say?
It's a beautiful army. It's absolutely gorgeous. And we're going to say it together here. I think it's good therapy for you. So now what cracks me up on this is that one of the best builds in the Ogre Maw Tribes books are Nobblers. Because I've been saying this for years. And Steve, join in with me on this. Say it with me. Let's say it together. Nobblers are the best unit in the game.
Nobblers are absolute trash.
See, you know what? You broke up there. A little bit of static. I don't know what happened. I think you burped. But see, Nobblers are the best unit in the game. And, you know, the thing is,
Nobblers don't even deserve a poor death.
Folks, he really is a very uncultured swine. You know, I think that I think even high class white trash would be ashamed of you right now.
I think even high class is laughing at you.
Oh no, he's right there with me, man. We're like brothers, man. We're like related.
Oh, I'm sorry, high class.
So I think that you know, when you look at, you know, the reasons and motivations, you know, for playing those armies, you know, I it's funny. I really started thinking about, you know, different armies, and it got me thinking, what other builds out there do we have that offer rend and ward save?
Look at how our tastes have changed over the years.
Sure.
For instance, I used to play nothing but Horde armies. Skaven.
You said Horde, didn't you?
Will you stop?
What'd I say? I'm just asking.
I used to play Skaven. I played Vampire Counts, where I had, like, you know, units of like 80 ghouls and something ridiculous. And now, because I'm older and I'm lazier, and I admit it, I don't want to take 5 hours moving models across the table. I love the fact that my army, including the Loon Shrine, has 35 models. I from now on, I will make every attempt to play low model count armies.
Okay,
don't want to move those models.
We've added another piece onto it then. You know, speaking of low model count. You know, well, how about this one then?
Low model count, high wounds.
How about this then, huh? Listen to this. Talk about low model count. Low model count, high wound, rend, ward save, six models. Two Frost Lords.
And I have it with trolls.
Well, two Frost Lords on a Stonehorn and four Stonehorn Beast Riders.
Love it.
Bang. There you go. Great charging.
And it's a good army, too.
It can
hold objectives.
It is. Well, yeah. Especially now that they're worth 10 and in some scenarios, 20. So yeah, I think that's you know, I wanted to get that in there because we'd really talked so much about, gosh, how many armies did we cover in this show so far? It's pretty cool. But that's kind of what I wanted to ask. You know, what motivates you to play an army? But good stuff, man. So here we are. We're at the question of the day. Can you believe it already? Here it is. We got the question of the day to ask. So, Steve,
lay it on me.
I'm going to throw this out for you. What is your favorite unit to play in your army and why?
Well, it's the only unit I have in my army, and it also happens to be my favorite, and that's, of course, the Rock Gut Tragus. And I think to spare us a repeat of what I already just said, it is, you know, basically just the rend, the ward save, the high model count, the high wound, low model count ability, and the fact that they can throw rocks at anything and not have to follow the shooting rules.
Yeah.
So I love the Rock Gut Tragus. I think they're just, for me, the only drawback to that unit is the bravery, and I can fix that with my Trog Boss being nearby.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm not saying this because it's a gimmick, but recently I've really loved my Nobblers. I know I'm going to say it. I mean, the unwashed masses, man. The Nobblers have become, in this little army of mine, almost independent of the Ogres. And they've, what I love about them is you take a 60-man unit of Nobblers, and you know, you look at the stats of a Nobbler themselves, and unimpressive probably isn't the best way to describe a Nobbler War Scroll on its own. It's pretty pathetic if you really look at it. I mean,
yeah, they're your standard basic one wound troop.
Well, I would even say in some cases less than that. I mean, they got a 6+ save. They're kind of speedy. You know, they move 5 inches.
They're born to die.
Bravery 4, exactly. But you know, there's a couple of things, little hidden gems. Number one, in large numbers, 60 of them in a unit, which is their max unit size, they get +1 bravery for every 10 in the model, or for every 10 in the unit. So you start them out at a 4+ bravery. By the time you're done building that whole entire unit, you're at a 10. Take a tyrant, slap him in the ass for D3 mortal wounds. Now they're not taking battle shock. You put those little suckers on an objective, they're not moving. But here's the other funny thing. Over 20, they get an additional attack in their melee. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot, but on 25-millimeter bases, you're getting the first two ranks in for attacks. Now, here's another thing. They got sharp stuff. They got 8 inches of sharp stuff, and the sharp stuff has been improved to 4s by 5s. Folks, I had a game once where I threw 72 shots of sharp stuff. 72 shots of sharp stuff. And of all of those things, you know what I wounded with? I wounded with 36. Now, granted, that's
high crazy rolling. Odds. Yeah, crazy odds. But
let's
okay.
let's just say you wound with 20. Okay,
that's
now
phenomenal.
Yeah, what out there? What hero can be able to resist 20 wounds? I don't care what you're save it a 3+.
Wound. Yeah, if it's a 6-wound hero or less, they're dead. Statistically, they should be
dead. I would even say a 12-wound hero.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very high probability that any normal hero on foot is going to be dead.
Yeah, and And so that for me right now is what I really look forward to playing, because, you know, they're kind of that you don't see them coming, you know.
No.
If I could ever say this about any unit in the game, Knobblers are that unit that they got their hand up Mona Lisa's skirt. You never see them coming. That's how awesome Knobblers
what
are.
What does that even mean?
They're sneaky little bastards. That's what it means.
Oh, good God.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the Grimdark Live experience and the show. If you want to support the show, please like and subscribe on YouTube and follow us on our podcast. This way, you'll be alerted when we post new content. If you'd like to support Grimdark Live further, head over to grimdarklive.com, get a t-shirt, dice, or there's Patreon, which makes our show possible. Keeps our mics on and the lights buzzing. Big thanks to everyone, past, present, and future, who have supported Grimdark Live. We do this because of all of you, and of course, we will continue doing this for as long as we can. Okay, you guys ready for more Grimdark Live? Let's get back to the show. Good stuff, man. Well, we're coming up to the closing thoughts here, and I know that my last closing thought a couple of weeks ago was a long, drawn-out palabra about, being petty. So I'm not going to do that to everyone now, but, you know, we're coming up to the holiday season. We're coming up to the time of giving, you know, whatever you practice, whatever you believe in, you know, and I know that a lot of GW stores, I know that a lot of independent stores are doing Secret Santas where you can go in and you can, you know, get a $25, $30, or $50 gift card and you can put yourself into a pool where people are also doing the same thing. They're reciprocating back. You know, let's remember that for many people in this hobby, we're fortunate and lucky to be able to play this game. This is not a cheap, anything that's a hobby, whether it's golf, whatever it might be, you know, there's an expense to it. Hobbies are expensive. And we have an opportunity here. We're very blessed and we're very fortunate to have this community of awesome people. I love this community has just tremendous people. Even the people I don't really care for, I really like them. But I'm going to say this right now, we're fortunate, but there's people out there that aren't as fortunate. Maybe they can't quite get over that hump to get that 1,000-point army. They can't quite get over the hump to get that one model that they really want that completes their entire unit. There's people out there that aren't as fortunate as maybe all of us. So, you know, let's try to remember that we're in this hobby, but what can we do to help build this community? You know, oftentimes, you know, here on Grimdark Live, we talk about, you know, the social contract of gaming. And that's part of it. The social contract is part of it where, you know, it's about growing that community. So let's remember what this time of year is and what it represents. And if you have an opportunity to, you know, maybe take a couple of models or a unit that you don't feel like you're going to play, rather than throwing them up on eBay, you know, hand them off to somebody. And I'm going to end with this. There's a guy in the community. His name is Christian Weir. And I've never forgotten this. Probably about 4 years ago, we were playing at a tournament at a store, and he just came up to me out of the blue because a couple of weeks earlier he had heard me say that I was interested in getting into the ogres or back into them. And he just had a bunch of Iron Guts and some, you know, at that time they were called Bulls, the Gluttons, and he just gave them to me. Just gave them to me, painted, done. Here you go. I'm not going to play these anymore, but, you know, and at that time, Christian and I didn't really know each other. But it was one of the nicest. I mean, it really reminded me of the generosity of some of the people out there and being an example of how to maintain that social contract. So remember, if you have an opportunity to go to your local gaming store, if you're not sure, ask them if they're going to do it, see if they'd be willing to. GW stores, I know, are doing it. Get involved with those Secret Santas. You know, do something good for the community. If you know that there's somebody out there that really could use maybe a couple of units that you have laying around, give them to them.
Be charitable.
Be charitable. And let's all remember that it's more than just the act of giving. It's building this community. Building this community so that, quite frankly, it's more people to be part of in this community. And more people that are going to remember you the way that I remember that awesome act that Christian Weir did for me out of the blue. So, And Christian, if you're listening, thank you very much. I've never forgotten that, buddy. And someday I'll get you back. I promise you. So that's it. That's my closing thoughts for the show. There you have
Excellent.
It. So that's it, man. I don't know of any other way other than when I keep talking about nobblers. I don't know of any other better way to close the show.
We don't want to ruin anyone's night.
Well, then that's it, man. That's a heck of a way to close the show. That's it. We're done. Another great show.
Grimdark Live, we'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. If you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more. So stay tuned and stay grim, all you dice chucking, glue sniffing gamer goons. You're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms. Bye.